This episode is brought to you by One House. Learn more about our comprehensive hospitality solutions at one-haus.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to On the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. This is the 120th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a top executive at City Harvest. I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to give back. Think of others and help those who are less fortunate than you. There are plenty of ways you can support a cause, from volunteering your time to donating money. A little effort can go a long way, and it will make you feel good too, as giving is rewarding. So be a giver. That's my tip today. Now we have a little change up. So my originally scheduled guest was Tom Colicchio, and he couldn't make it today because he's actually opening a new restaurant downtown Manhattan called Fowler and Wells. He's in the process of opening it, I think, as we speak. So we've rescheduled for December 7th. And fortunately, I have another amazing guest who's in the studio with me. It is Naomi Gygas Downey. She's the nonprofit fundraising executive for City Harvest, the world's first food rescue organization dedicated to feeding New York City's hungry men, women, and children. Since 1982, City Harvest has rescued more than 500 million pounds of food. Naomi is a professional fundraiser with a proven record of leadership and success. And we've known each other a while, and I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming out to Brooklyn on this summer fall day.
I know, I thought it was August, but apparently it's October.
I know, I don't know what to wear, but I guess it's a good problem.
Yes, it is.
So I like to start out with my guest backgrounds and how you got into what you're doing now. I mean, did you set out to work on fundraising and work for a nonprofit? Or
Well, I kind of fell into it. I was actually a music major in college. So after I got out, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I applied to a lot of music organizations throughout the city. I also tried to become an apprentice to a composer.
Wow, cool.
Honestly, the only company that would call me back was Carnegie Hall, which is, you know, certainly not anything to sneeze at. So my first job there, I was a... I handled VIP outreach and VIP relations. So anytime some sort of celebrity or VIP wanted to come to Carnegie Hall, they would call me. And I moved into community outreach, which I did, which is where I really got into doing events. I was responsible for putting free concerts on throughout New York City that was basically sponsored by Carnegie Hall. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about my job, besides obviously curating these amazing musical artists, was going with the fundraising team to meet with different types of supporters, whether it was through corporate or government, and pitching the organization and pitching these programs to them. And I just caught a bug with... you know, being able to sell something and get money from it. It just was something I was fascinated by. And then I saw the recession happen, I think around 2002, and actually Carnegie Hall went through an evolution where they changed around their programs. So I decided that fundraising was really the right way for me to move. And so I left and I went to a variety of other organizations, which eventually led me to City Harvest. And an interesting point is when I was at Carnegie Hall, one of the last events I did, we actually donated food to City Harvest. And I had such an incredible experience that I had been targeting that organization to try to get a job. So eventually I landed my dream job there about 10 years ago.
That's amazing. I did not know you had background in music.
Yeah, that was my entire background with food. I mean, food and music have always been my two things. And I was just, it was all I studied in college, actually.
Where did you go to school?
Syracuse.
Ah, that's my parents' Go Orange school.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I got it. I got it very well. Yeah, they'll be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in the New York area?
I grew up in Westchester, so right outside the city.
Okay, so
so not far.
You've stayed. You've stayed here.
Yeah, and I moved back about 4 years ago, and live around the corner from my parents. So
what part of Westchester?
I live in White Plains.
Okay, because I've had some clients recently in Westchester.
Yeah.
So I've been learning about the different neighborhoods.
It's a burgeoning dining scene. So
yeah,
there's some really good restaurants out there. I mean, I still prefer New York City. I hope I can say that. But
no, me too. And I prefer, I don't mind, like, when I go up to my clients and I do the commute every once in a while, it's sort of fun, especially this time of year when the leaves start to change and to see the nature. But I still like being in the city.
Me too. I mean, that's why I actually love living in Westchester, but I love working in the city. I love dining in the city. I mean, to me, there's nothing like New York. You can't replicate it anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So when you started with City Harvest, what was your position and how has it changed over the years?
So I started just overseeing our events, which, I mean, just makes it sound like it was nominal, but it was back then we had somewhere between 5 and 6 large signature events. And then over time we've tried different types of things. And then, we've landed now on 3 signature events because these are the 3 events that raise the most amount of money. And one of the things that after I started, I quickly got very closely involved in was our relationships with the chefs and restaurants, because that was an area that I was very interested in. And there was a need for that area to really grow. So I also took over that area of the organization. And then I also oversaw and oversee the sponsorship. So a lot of corporations now, they like to put their marketing dollars towards events and have, either it's they have their logo on something or they want to have access to high net worth individuals or in some capacity. So that's an area that I also work with currently.
So what are the 3 signature events you're now working on?
We have our annual gala, which is in the spring, and that's, your typical gala where people come and they have a cocktail party. We do a seated dinner, and then there's a live and silent auction. There's dancing. It's really fun. And we do that at Cipriani 42nd Street, and that event raises over $2 million every year.
It's really
evolved quite a bit over the years. And it has usually around 600 people. And we also have a lot of chefs and industry leaders that attend. So it's a really it's really fun. We also have 2 tasting events. One which we just had recently, a couple of weeks ago, at Basketball City on the East Side. What is our big signature, massive chef tasting? We do over 70 chefs in restaurants. We have a live and silent auction. We have a really wonderful VIP room with exceptional wines and food. This year it was curated by Michael White. And then we have these VIP bungalows where people can pay to have their own, essentially their own cabana, what, you'd think of in, next to the pool in Vegas, but much more tasteful. And it's just a really special experience to be able to connect with some of the best restaurants and chefs in the city, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a bit against hunger.
Thank you.
And
yes.
Yeah. No, I've been going to that event on and off, or I try to go every year, but it's always a stellar lineup of chefs. So all of your events, you get amazing restaurants involved, and the bungalows and the different aspects you add in every year, like change it up, is cool to watch, like the evolution.
That's actually, yeah. And you know, each year we try to do something, we add some sort of element. So this year, for example, with the bungalows, we had the bungalow guests were able to check in and receive a glass of champagne and get a hand towel, and they're able to get escorted directly to their bungalow.
Oh,
I mean, just little things that we always... Next year, buy a bungalow and we'll show you.
All right. Yeah, okay. Work on that. Can't imagine what that costs.
I know. And then we also have Summer in the City, which is our other tasting event that we do in June. And that's geared more towards our younger donors. Mm-hmm. It's a lower level ticket price, so that it's more accessible to our more junior philanthropists. And it's really fun. It's also a way for us to work directly with some of the newer up and coming chefs that maybe aren't ready to do an event of 1,000 people like BID is, but they're able to, you know, do an event where there's like 600 or 700 people, and they also have a connection with some of the people, you know, their consumers, their direct, the people who come to their restaurant. So that one's also really fun. We had, that one was in June this year. We raised, around $400,000, and we had Questlove was a DJ. I mean, it's really lively. You know, everybody was dancing. So it's, you know, one of the things I love about City Harvest events, I guess I'm tooting my horn a little bit, but
go for it.
We try to make them really fun, and we try to really think about what does a guest want? It's not always how can we squeeze every last dollar out of somebody. It's what are people going to enjoy? What are they going to want to eat? What are they going to want to drink? Who are they going to want to see? What music are they going to want to listen to? And then if we're going to ask people for a lot of money, we want to try to give them a lot of value out of what they're paying for, so that they really walk away with, wow, that was a great experience. That was totally worth it. I want to go back.
You do that, and you should toot your own horn, because your events are amazing, because I've been going to them for years, and Summer in the City I've been to many times. And you do cool venues like rooftops, and I don't know, and you bring in hot new chefs, and yeah, it's like a win-win. I don't know. I think you do an amazing job.
Thank you.
So how far out do you start planning these events? Is it just all year you're just working? You like Bid Against Hunger ended, and now you're on to the next one?
On to Gala, yes.
Yeah.
It overlaps. The events, typically we start around 6 months out, sometimes more. If you're looking, I mean, things like booking the date and the venue have, you know, about a year out. And then the real planning starts about 6 months, and then you get really, really into it 3 to 4 months out. But it's a year-round thing. So, for example, I was doing work on our gala, which is in April, this summer. And not a lot, but there were still things that need to get done. And now that bid is over, we're really starting to focus on what's coming up in the spring. So it's a full year. Even though three events doesn't sound like a lot, it is a lot. And we have a, you know, full team of people that work on it.
About how many people are working on these, like, year-round? I know you bring in more people
we
at
do.
The event.
We do. We have, there's 6 people on our team right now, and we also have outside event companies that we work with for our 3 events, because they're so labor-intensive, and there's so much outreach that needs to be done, especially for our tasting events with the chefs. We need to be able to have somebody who can just, that's their entire job, is just back and forth with communication.
Yeah. No, there are so many details with event planning. I don't want to do it. I want to go to the events and support, but I don't want to do it.
It's fun. I mean, it can be really fun. It's a lot of work. It's very labor intensive, and there's so many people that have I've spoken to over the years that have said, I want to be an event planner. And I ask them why. And they say, well, I love parties. And you're not a guest. So you're actually working. And even though people will see me running around or, you know, and I can actually talk to people, you know, throughout our events, I'm always working. So I'm not at the event sipping champagne and eating food from, you know, an amazing chef. I'm actually, if I'm trying the food, it's because the chef said, I was talking to him and he said, here, you need to try this. And I can't, you know, I'm not going to say no. So I'm always working.
Yeah, no, I get that from doing PR and working
You understand it.
I get it. Like it's, you're working at it, but I think someone who wants to get into event planning really has to be very detail oriented because there's so many details mm-hmm. and that sometimes you do go to events and you realize people have missed that they need more garbages or whatever it is, like the things that you mm-hmm. take for granted sometimes.
It's true. It's true. And I think you have to care about people, because if you don't care about other people, then you're not going to care about presenting a good event, because that's at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do, is create a positive experience for people.
Right. I agree. And we're going to take a break on that note. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by RecTech. And this track is called Dues Paid.
This episode is brought to you by One House. At One House, we noticed that most serious chefs and managers don't hang out in brightly lit offices, so we go out in the field to gather the best talent wherever they may be. We meet and talk to them, like humans used to do back in the day. We are the people people. Our talent sourcing covers salaried dining room, kitchen, and corporate professionals. We thrive in Michelin-starred, James Beard, and mom-and-pop environments alike, from coast to coast. Drop us a line at one-haus.com or at info@one-haus.com for our confidential, up-to-date, and relevant career options, or if you're an operator seeking a culinary or management-level pro.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Naomi Gyges Downey of City Harvest. And we were talking a lot about these events, which are so fun. And actually, one more comment on them before I want to dive a little more into City Harvest as the organization and the food rescue. But with the events, you also have the auction.
Yes.
Which is a major component, the live auction plus the mm-hmm. silent auction. I don't know. I'm always in awe of auctioneers and their ability to do that as a job.
It can be hard. I mean, I've been fortunate to be able to work very closely with our auctioneers, and we've worked with the same one now for, I don't know, probably about 4 or 5 years. And he does both our fall benefit and it's a Bid Against Hunger and gala. And he does a really good job. He's very entertaining and he does a good job of assessing the crowd and figuring out whether or not there's money in the room or not. And then if he's really brought in a significant amount of money for the organization. So we've been very lucky.
Yeah, no, it's great. So City Harvest is the world's first food rescue organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It was founded over 30 years ago by a group of people who they were at a restaurant and saw that the restaurant was wasting food. So they decided to back up their station wagon into the back of the restaurant and pick up that food. And they took it over to places that were providing food for the hungry. And the organization has evolved since then, obviously. But at its core, it's the same. So our overall mission is we rescue food that from people that have too much and give it to people who don't have enough. And, you know, obviously we've increased what, you know, the poundage. We're currently at 55 million pounds of food each year. We have 22 trucks. The trucks are all over the city picking up food from all different places and dropping it off at soup kitchens and food pantries throughout the city. And, you know, one stat I want to make sure I mention is that there are 1.4 million people in New York City that, need food. And a third of those actually are kids. And this organization, City Harvest, is just, in my opinion, essential to helping the hungry of the city, because there's just, and we're just scratching the surface. I mean, there's so many people that need help. And honestly, that's why I work there, because for that reason.
No, I feel your emotion, it's an amazing organization for a great cause. What you do, and it just makes sense, because working with restaurants, or even just as a consumer, you see waste, mm-hmm. and that food can go to other people who need it. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful that you're able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about food waste these days, which I think is actually very good, because, yeah. You know, food just gets thrown out for all different kinds of reasons. There's 40% of the food in this country is actually thrown out. And we work to reduce food waste in New York City. And the food that we rescue is all good food. So it's not what you would think of what's in the trash. It's food that, say a restaurant has asparagus and they just need to use the tips for some sort of recipe. We'll take the rest of that asparagus. We'll then take it to a soup kitchen, and then it'll be on someone's plate that night. And that's just one way that we're able to reduce food waste. I mean, we work with every type of donor, from, you know, huge manufacturers to the small bakery who's donating just a bag of bread. It really runs the gamut, and every one of our food donors is valued to us. And it's the way that we're able to provide as much food as we are, is all of these incredible, generous donors that are able to donate food to us.
Yeah, so if there's a chef or a restaurateur out there listening, mm-hmm. and they want to get involved, mm-hmm. how do they? Do they go to your website? Is there a form to fill out?
Yeah, they can go to our website. I mean, the great thing about City Harvest is that no matter what way somebody wants to help, whether it's financially or with food or volunteering, there's a way to do it. And what you'll find is that every person that I've met, at least, who supports the organization in any of those ways has a personal story behind it. And we really appreciate any type of donor. And so to answer your question, if a chef wanted to get involved, I mean, they can donate food, they can donate their time. We have cooking demonstrations that we do at some of our programs throughout the city. They could participate in an event if it's appropriate. We also have a program, a really neat program called Chef Special, where restaurants will create a dish, say lasagna, and they'll create, you know, five trays of lasagna. And on a designated day, our trucks will come and pick it up. Say it's the first Thursday of every month, the truck comes and picks it up and then takes it directly to a soup kitchen, and it's served to the clients that same day. And so we have restaurants like Landmark or Stand Social that do that for us. And that's another great way for restaurants to even just dip their toe in the water and see if it's something that they're interested in. Because at the end of the day, we're not encouraging food waste. So we don't want them to, have all this extra food that they have to, you know, lose money. We want them to support us in the way that makes sense for them.
Yeah. And that makes sense. No, and I think you're right with the food waste becoming a more talked about topic, even I was thinking how I went to Dan Barber's Wasted pop-up last year, mm-hmm. where he did the whole menu with mm-hmm. what are ingredients that are typically thrown out of like peels of apples and things, and it was excellent. Mm-hmm. So it's great that there is more awareness and action. So what you also have a chef's council with mm-hmm. with involved and do they what's their role?
So we have our food council consists of about 70 restaurants, chefs and restaurateurs. It's chaired by Jeffrey Zakarian, and for many years, actually, and it was chaired by Eric Repair. He was the founder, and Eric is still obviously very involved with City Harvest. He's the vice chair of our board. And Jeffrey has done a really great job of helping to evolve the food council even further than where we were before, in bringing on some interesting new well-known chefs that we're able to work with. The chefs work with us in their own way. So just like a donor or any type of supporter, we are able to individually connect with each of the chefs and restaurateurs so that they're able to support the organization in the way that works best for them. So whether it's through one of our events or if it's through donating either food or funds, I mean, some of them are generous financial supporters as well. We're able to develop a program for each one of them so that they're able to support us. And it's really, in my opinion, some of the best around. You know, there's others.
And the best dressed.
And the best dressed, of course. Of course, you can't beat those outfits.
Yeah. Jeffrey Zakarian takes the prize every time. He'll
could
win
not
it.
Not agree
yeah.
more.
Yeah. Dapper. Very
yes,
dapper.
Agreed.
No, but yeah, you have a tremendous amount of talent involved, and because it's a great cause. Yeah. I mean, people want to get behind it.
We're very, very fortunate. We have tremendous, tremendous support from the restaurant community in New York and even, you know, some outside, but it's been such a pleasure of mine to be able to have the opportunity to work with some of these people because it's I personally have been so interested in food and restaurants my entire life, and so to then be working with some of these people professionally is just you can't beat that.
Yeah, it's a good job.
Good job.
Well, cool. Okay, we're going to take another break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to play my speed round game and then talk a little industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Music for this break is brought to you by RecTech. And this track is called Field Trip World.
Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Naomi Gyges Downey. Keep saying your name right. I'm very proud of myself. I think I am, right?
You absolutely
are. Okay, cool. So it's time for my speed round game. So what this is I name a couple things, either or preference, and you just pick your favorite. So here we go.
Okay.
Eat in or eat out?
Can I say depends?
You can say whatever you want. I don't have rules.
I love to cook and I love to eat out. So,
okay.
Both. I may have a hard time with this because I like to do lots of things.
All right. No problem. My dad's a scorekeeper, but it's his own little thing. So you might not do so well in his system, but okay. As I say, everyone's a winner in my game. Okay. So, wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Well, it depends on the time of year and what I'm doing. Currently, I've been drinking wine a lot. Not a lot, but I mean, that's kind of what I might go to right now.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Wine for the fall.
But I love a good cocktail before dinner. If I'm out to dinner.
Okay.
And I love cocktails in the summer, too.
Mixing it up.
Mm-hmm.
How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
All plates.
All plates. I like that.
If I had to pick, I would pick small plates.
Okay. Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping for sure.
Okay. How about tasting events, like walk around tasting events or sit down dinners?
Tasting events.
How about Pier 36 Basketball City or Metropolitan
Pavilion?
Oh,
gosh, you're getting me in trouble.
Oh, I don't know. Or I don't know. Those are the venues I know you've...
Metropolitan Pavilion.
Okay. I mean, your events were at the Metropolitan Pavilion for many years.
I really liked it there. And I think they both have benefits.
Yeah, no, we'll leave it like that. Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Awesome.
Do people pick Brooklyn?
Some do.
Okay.
And then they feel, well, the Manhattan, people who pick Manhattan a lot of times make a comment that they feel bad because we're in Brooklyn right now.
Oh, I don't feel bad.
I love it.
Although I do love this. I do.
Yeah.
I do.
No. I we're not going to get kicked out. Yeah, I hear you. It's all good. So industry news. One of the things happened this week. So Michelin Guide came out first time for Washington. It's an article in the Washingtonian. 12 D.C. restaurants earned Michelin stars by Jessica Sidman. And so there are no 3-star Michelins in D.C. And 2 stars went to 3 restaurants in at Little Washington, Mini Bar, and Pineapple and Pearls. And then there were, I think, 9 1-stars. So, what's your take on this? Have you any comments on Michelin? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... I guess it's somewhat controversial, Michelin, but it's a good guide for people, especially people who don't know the city and may want to go and try one way for it's just one type of review. I mean, I think if you're really looking for a good restaurant, you have to look at a variety of different places. I mean, when I go, if I go somewhere out, especially outside of the city of New York, to eat. So say I'm traveling, I do a lot of research because I'm so interested in food, and I'll ask not only people that I know, but I may look at, whether it's Michelin Guide or not as much, but, I'll look at, you know, a variety of different things. And I think these types of things are subjective. You have to take it for what it's worth. And, it's unfortunate that there's no 3 stars because, I'm certain that there's some really wonderful restaurants in DC. But I think it's, I think it's just one way that people,
yeah, I agree with that. I think there were several articles that came out after this that start, you know, kind of criticizing it or saying they missed this or why is this on? And there's always people who are going to have their opinions, and it's mm-hmm. subjective, but I like looking and seeing what is being noted on mm-hmm. these lists. And I did take a spontaneous trip to DC recently, and I wanted to go to Pineapple and Pearls. I there's no reservations, but I did go to their bakery, which is very accessible and delicious. And I went to some of the ones on the 1-star. I went to the Dabney, and I went to Tail Up Goat. I don't know. It's good to have these guides to see. And I like using a lot of outlets or mm-hmm. getting information different places too, mostly from industry people my source.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think word of mouth is a really important way to get restaurants. But, you know, a lot of the best meals that you can have are not necessarily going to be in one of those books. And that's okay. It really doesn't, you know, you could get a referral from somebody and it's not something that you found in a book or, it hasn't been reviewed, but it could be one of the best meals that you have. And, so that's why I think you just have to take it with, for what it is. And it's just a guide. It's one way.
Right.
It's one guide.
Yeah. And congratulations to all these chefs that were in the book.
Sure.
And it's amazing. I mean, I don't know. It's an honor. And I think I know the chefs do look for it.
That's the thing. I know a lot of them say, oh, it's, you know, it's not, I mean, I've read a lot of chefs say it's not, it doesn't matter. And, you know, they don't know what they're doing or whatever it is. And, but at the end of the day, they all look and they all want to be in it and they all want to have, 3 stars. And if they don't, you know, it's still something that they think about.
Yeah, true. Well, you all can check out the DC Guide Michelin and let us know what you think. Another article, Chicago Tribune. So James Beard Awards has decided to stay in Chicago through 2021. It's an article by Louisa Chu. So James Beard Awards, they're coming up on their 3rd year in Chicago. It was always in New York. And they've committed to another 4 years. And I've been going every year. And last year in Chicago at the awards, there was talk or sort of like speculation about whether it would move. And San Francisco and I think New Orleans were kind of bidding for it. But Chicago has been so welcoming and has an amazing relationship with them that they've decided to stay. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was big news.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, it also solidifies that there are restaurant scenes outside of New York City, which
there are. No, I'm just kidding. No.
But that's the thing. I mean, I think for a long time, it was New York or maybe a couple of other cities. And, I've been to Chicago recently. I've been to New Orleans recently and I've had some of my best meals there and you know, they really, there's a lot more competition in some of these other cities and even not in major cities. And, you know, you hear about all these chefs that are going back to their hometowns or somewhere in the Midwest to open up restaurants in much smaller cities. And I think it's great. I mean, personally, I mean, I'm sure the New York chefs miss the awards, but, I think it just shows that there's good food in more places.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem making trips out there. Nope. Chicago has a strong dining scene. I mean, D.C. has a strong dining scene. There's a lot happening across the country. And another note, I just came out yesterday of some news about how Food and Wine magazine is now doing a culinary festival in Brooklyn, just as a note of something. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, as there's now Food and Wine festivals everywhere, but they announced that they're doing one in February at Barclays Center. So just showing, I don't know, bringing in, it's just the interest in food, whether it's these awards that are happening in different cities and it's just, or festivals, it just keeps growing. The industry keeps getting stronger.
It does. I mean, Brooklyn alone has such an incredible dining scene. I mean, you could almost pull it away from New York City in some way. I mean, people in Brooklyn would probably feel that way, but, you know, we're so lucky that we have Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and, you know, even Staten Island, the Bronx, you know, there's just something for everybody in all of our boroughs. So I think we have the benefit of having even more than a lot of these other cities. So,
yeah. And that's segue into a little shout out I want to give for NYC Food and Wine Festival, Wine and Food Festival, which was this past weekend. I mean, it's grown so tremendously. It was over 100 events. It's by Lee Schrager. Their charities, they have No Kid Hungry and Food Bank for New York City, which are incredible organizations as well. And I went to some events. I had some chefs and restaurants participating, and it's always a very well-organized, fantastic festival weekend. So I just wanted to give them a shout out and say congratulations. And then another notice, coming up next week on Monday is Autism Cooks. And it's on October 24th. And I'm going to be going, this is my first time going. And this is an event that their mission is to provide holistic health and wellness options to those with autism and developmental disabilities for low cost to free. And Chef Franklin Becker is involved. He was, at City Harvest. So if you're interested in checking it out, their website is popearth.org. And lots of charities, lots of good causes, and lots of great food. So on that note, we're going to take one more break and come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by TacStar, and this track is called Walkin' Like a Cowboy.
Back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience, and this week it's at Bad Saint. So here's the rundown. Location, 3226 11th Street in Washington, D.C. The concept, a cozy transporting enclave specializing in Filipino dishes, cocktails, and culture. The chef, Tom Cunanan, and co-owners Genevieve Villamora and Nick Pimentel. So why did I go? Because I was on a spontaneous trip to D.C., and this new restaurant has received national recognition. My experience. So my friend, pastry chef Piché Ong, introduced me to co-owner Genevieve, and I was able to get a seat at the chef's counter at this popular no-reservations restaurant. Since I had been restaurant hopping, I ordered light-ish, although everything looked delicious, but my server was very helpful in helping explain the dishes to me and figure out what to get. So, what did I get? I had the ginseng ampalaya, which is bitter melon, farm egg, and preserved black beans, and I had the ginseng toya, which is little neck clams, Chinese sausage, and Sichuan chili, and it came with rice. My take? Who knew I would like bitter melon so much? And the clams with their broth were exceptional. The ambiance is dark, intimate space that feels and smells like you're in the kitchen, because you basically are. I'd say it's perfect for those seeking rich and flavorful Filipino food and for solo diners, as it's mostly counter-like seating. Interesting tidbit. Bad Saint was selected on Bon Appetit's Hot 10 Best New Restaurants in America this year, and it received a Bib Gourmand from Michelin. Personal fun fact, I am sure my parents are wondering right now when I had time to go to D.C. The cost, $31, not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. Website is badsaintdc.com. So yes, a lot happening in D.C. And next week, my guests, so it's time for my final question. So next week, my guests are Luis Von Richten and Cedric Von Richten. They are the co-founders with their father, John George, of Food Dreams Foundation, a John George Foundation, that they just founded recently. And they're offering scholarships, training, and job placement opportunities, which is what it's about. But Naomi, I want to see if you could ask Luis and Cedric a question.
Sure. My question is, how would you suggest a young or new chef should get involved in some sort of charity? What are some ways that they could find a charity or support the community in some way?
That's a great question. Yeah. You have to tune in next week to find out the answer. No, it's great. No, it's good. I'm excited to talk with the Vung Richtens.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be. So, great. Well, that's the show. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah,
this was fun.
I'm glad you were able to come out, and I really am a big fan of everything you and your team does at City Harvest.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful organization.
Thank you.
So people want to check it out. Their website is cityharvest.org. I've been talking with Naomi Gyges Downey. She's the nonprofit fundraising executive at City Harvest. Their Twitter is at City Harvest, and their Instagram is at City Harvest NYC and NG Downey. You can find me on all social media platforms. I'm at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and we are also on iTunes and Stitcher. Many thanks to my show's fall season sponsor. It is One House Hospitality Headhunters. Their website is one-house.com. Their Twitter is one_house, and Instagram is onehouse. That's O-N-E-H-A-U-S. And that is the show. Thanks to my engineer, Pierre. I'm Sherry Bayer. Thank you for being part of All in the Industry. See you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.